Our sermon is based on a reading from Ecclesiastes 5, verse 8 through 20. Ecclesiastes 5. If you see the poor oppressed in a district, and justice and rights denied, do not be surprised at such things. For one official is eyed by a higher one, and over them both are others higher still. The increase from the land is taken by all. The king himself profits from the fields. Whoever loves money never has enough. Whoever loves wealth is never satisfied with their income. This too is meaningless. As goods increase, so do those who consume them. And what benefit are they to the owners except to feast their eyes on them? The sleep of a laborer is sweet, whether they eat little or much. But as for the rich, their abundance permits them no sleep. I've seen a grievous evil under the sun: wealth hoarded to the harm of its owners, or wealth lost through some misfortune, so that when they have children, there's nothing left for them to inherit. Everyone comes naked from their mother's womb. And as everyone comes, so they depart. They take nothing from their toil that they can carry in their hands. This too is a grievous evil. As everyone comes, so they depart. And what do they gain since they toil for the wind? All their days they eat in darkness, with great frustration, affliction, and anger. This is what I have observed to be good: that it is appropriate for a person to eat, to drink, and to find satisfaction in their toil. Some labor under the sun during the few days of life God has given them, for this is their lot. Moreover, when God gives someone wealth and possessions and the ability to enjoy them, to accept their lot and be happy in their toil, this is a gift from God. They seldom reflect on the days of their life because God keeps them occupied with gladness of heart. This is the word of the Lord. Dear friends of God, what is your attitude toward work? Maybe you resent work. I owe, so off to work I go. Your work sucks the life out of you. You do it because you have to survive. It's a necessary evil. You live for the day you don't have to work anymore. Maybe your attitude is you idolize work. This is where you find every part of who you are. This is, you get all your identity, all your self-worth from work. What do you do? I do this. This is who I am. And when you're unemployed or you're retired, you feel like a nobody, despite the fact that it is God who gives you your identity. Or maybe you secularize work. You live in two separate worlds, religion and work, and you never bring the two together. Work stays at work, church stays at church. Church people stay church people, work people stay work people. Your Sunday life doesn't impact your work life, and you keep them separate. Are these the only attitudes you can have toward work? What about a wise attitude toward work? Well, Ecclesiastes 5 gives us a wise attitude to work. It speaks about an attitude that is good. And what is that good attitude? This is what I have observed to be good: that it is appropriate for a person to eat, to drink, and to find satisfaction in their toilsome labor under the sun during the few days of life God has given them, for this is their lot. Moreover, when God gives someone wealth and possessions and the ability to enjoy them, to accept their lot and be happy in their toil, this is a gift of God. They seldom reflect on the days of their life because God keeps them occupied with gladness of heart. It is good for us to live each day with enough food, our daily bread, as Christ calls us to pray for, to acknowledge and revere God, and to find satisfaction in our work. In other words, contentment in our work is the wise attitude of Ecclesiastes. The Bible urges us to find contentment in every circumstance. Godliness with contentment is great gain, says Ephesians, or says Paul in Timothy 6, verse 6. And here Ecclesiastes leads us to find that contentment is something we can have at work. Now, you might think, well, that's a nice thing for a pastor to say. If you haven't been to my job, you don't know where I work. That's a great ideal. Let's all be contented workers. That's what you expect a pastor to say. But that doesn't match reality. There's so much in life that prevents us from finding that contentment. So much in life that causes us to be discontented workers. But that's the beauty of Ecclesiastes. It's not all sweetness and light. It's not just this glib statement like, oh yeah, just be good, contented workers. It just doesn't lift up those lofty ideals and lift it at that. The preacher speaks about the aches and pains of reality as well. Just read the first part again of what we've read and get a sense of all the discontent that can happen in a person's life and work. And the preacher names many of the stark realities, the gritty, grimy dynamics that takes us far away from contentment. The writer sees the contentment of oppression. The rich tend to take charge and their power intimidates the poor. If you see the poor oppressed in a district and justice and rights denied, don't be surprised. Don't be surprised at those things. For one official is eyed by a higher one, and over them both are others higher still. The increase from the land is taken by all. The king himself profits from the fields. You work hard, you do your thing, and then your boss comes along and just undoes it all. I talked to somebody who said, you know, I did all this research for my PhD thesis, and I had a great plan, and my professor published it under his name. Somebody took it. And then they create a system that keeps you small and weak and them in power. It becomes oppressive and intimidating, and it doesn't just happen to us, it happens by us. Pity the poor farm workers in Ontario on some of our farms. They come to Ontario hoping for a better life for themselves and their families back home, but according to a UN report this month, wage theft, excessive working hours, limited breaks, physical abuse, lack of protective equipment, and employers who confiscate documents, arbitrarily cut working hours, and prevent workers from seeking health care creates a breeding ground for contemporary forms of slavery as it institutionalizes asymmetries of power that favor employers and prevent workers from exercising their rights. In Ontario, they work hard all day and the ones in power oppress them. Do not be surprised at this, says the writer of Ecclesiastes. There is injustice and rights denied, and it happens, and it creates discontent. Maybe you've seen it. The writer also sees a discontent that's caused by misplaced love. Whoever loves money never has money enough. Whoever loves wealth is never satisfied with his income. This too is meaningless. Greed and materialism have no built-in safeguards that will keep a check on this, or satisfying limits that check you, and they just keep going. And they leave you with isolation and loneliness. Work becomes a mean to getting more and more in the mistaken idea that more will bring happiness. Solomon, who's said to have written this book, understands that discontent. He understands that rat race. He understands the saying, whoever dies with the most toys wins, because he had the most toys. And still he experienced this as meaningless and empty. Notice that the writer uses the word love. Whoever loves money, not whoever possesses money. Sometimes the two go in hand, but not always. To the money lover, there's never enough money. It's amazing, because money can buy most of the comforts of life, but not one bit of contentment. You work hard, you move up the company ladder, you get a bigger and bigger income, but if you don't have a check on your greed and materialism, if you're dissatisfied, there's never enough. You're never satisfied. You always need $10,000 more, or $100,000 more, or maybe $1 million more. You always need one more promotion, one more acquisition, one more level. And if you get it, or if your company shares pay a big dividend, or if your investments pay off, well, we're not so sure. Maybe we have to be a bit more secure. Maybe we need more money. There's never enough because you have misplaced your love. And the preacher says, this too is meaningless. And it's folly. It's vanity, he said. He also sees the discontent caused by abundance. He says, it's interesting, you know, like if you have lots of things, you may be discontent. As goods increase, so do those who consume them. And what benefit are they to the owner except to feast his eyes on them? The sleep of a laborer is sweet, whether he eats little or much, but the abundance of a rich man permits him no sleep. Imagine that poor rich man. So much money, so many goods, and so many worries. So many worries and so little sleep. So many parasites trying to get at what you have. So much discontent. Controversial billionaire H. Ross Perot, he once said this, guys, just remember, if you get lucky, if you make a lot of money, if you get out and buy lots of stuff, it's going to break. You got your biggest, fanciest mansion in the world. It has air conditioning. It's got a pool. Just think of all the pumps that are going to go out. Or go to a yacht basin in any place in the world. Nobody's smiling, and I'll tell you why. Something broke that morning. The generator's out. The microwave doesn't work. Oven doesn't work. Things just don't mean happiness. And the preacher says, as you get more stuff, there are more people trying to get a piece of that. There's managing consultants and lawyers and tax advisors and accountants and household help and sponging relatives. And there's more than enough food but little peace of mind. You're always worried that someone's out to steal or cheat you. You always want to protect your assets. You always worry if the deal's going to make you any money. And you wake up in the night thinking, what if I'm spread out too thin? Is this a guy going to rip me off? And around he turns. And maybe you know that discontent. There's enough oppression. There's enough misplaced love. There's enough frustration in our work situations that comes from places we would never imagine. It isn't all so great when you have a battleground to go to each morning. Work becomes a scene of self-seeking and quarreling, exploitation and caustic competition. And the blessing of work is riddled with the curse of frustration and hostility in discontent. And yet, having seen all this discontent, and this is nothing new. I mean, this is ancient wisdom. This comes from the Bible times, and here we are living, and we experience the same things. And so the same thing that he sees is true for us today. Despite the oppression and the dissatisfaction and frustration and naming it for what it is, the wise preacher of Ecclesiastes, he tells us that there is something good. It is good to find contentment in our daily bread and the daily toil that is our lot. He says, then I realized that it is good and proper for a man to eat and drink and to find satisfaction in his toilsome labor under the sun during the few days of life God has given him, for this is his lot. Moreover, when God gives any man wealth and possessions and enables him to enjoy them, to accept his lot and be happy in his work, this is a gift of God. He seldom reflects on the days of his life because God keeps him occupied. Find contentment in your work. Find satisfaction with your income. Find the contented sleep of a hard-working laborer. It doesn't mean you shouldn't be rich. Nor does it say you're better off if you're poor. It doesn't say you have to put up with abuse and injustice. It does say that contentment is the key. And notice, how do I get that contentment? How do I get that wise way of what the Bible's getting at? How do I get to be that wise person who's content in work? Notice that the contentment is a gift of God. This, too, is a gift of God. It's something that's given to you. It's something that the Spirit has placed in your heart. If you have the ability to enjoy your work and be content with your wealth, this is a gift of God. God doesn't just say, okay, here you go, have this gift. He gives us a perspective. He gives us a sense of what's real and what's not real and our place in the world and what work really is. Work isn't just about getting money. It isn't just about getting an identity as a person who does this or that. It's not about amassing power, prestige, wealth. Work is a part of how God created the world. He created human beings to work. Work isn't a bad thing or a demeaning thing, nor is it everything. It's a valuable part of our lives. And God meant for work to be service. Work simply means serving others. Each of us has been called and gifted by God to a particular kind of work which complements the work of others and together meets needs not only of ourselves, but also the greater community. We use our time and our talents to serve our families, our friends, our community, and our world. Work is part of being a steward of the creation. The first church I served was in a small town called Burdett, Alberta. It's on the bald prairies. The only trees that are there were planted by people. And when it says preach the gospel to the ends of the earth, in Burdett, you kind of think you've got there because it's really flat. My sister, she just wrote in our WhatsApp, she's driving through the prairies and she goes, who lives here? Like, why do people live in these places? And maybe you've driven across the prairies and thought that. But, well, we were there in Burdett between Lethbridge and Medicine Hat. And I'll never forget a comment one of the farmers made. And they were all farmers or somehow related to the farming industry. And he was wondering out loud, why do I still farm? The pay is lousy. My father got more for a bushel of wheat than I did. And he didn't have half the overhead. And the risks are great. One hailstorm and your labor gives you nothing. And the work is never ending. There's always a machine to fix, a fence to mend, a field to improve. So why, here he is. He's thinking, why am I doing all this? And then he answered his own question. And I think it was wise when he said it. He said, but someone has to feed the world. Someone has to feed the world. And when you see all the grain cars on the tracks going to port, all that wheat going to export, he's helping to feed the world. His work is service. And that's the perspective on work that we get from the Bible. Work is service. Last week, a member of the Burdett CRC, where I served as the pastor, posted on Facebook how he and his community harvested a crop for the Canadian Food Grains Bank. And the volunteer work these farmers provided was a service to the poor. So they all got together. They had a big plot of, I think it was a section. And together, they harvested it and filled it into the big trucks and shipped it off for the hungry in the world. And as political scientist Paul Marshall puts it, we're not called to work because we need money, although we can rightly expect a proper income from our job. We're not called to work because leisure is evil, for it is not. Rather, we're called to work as God's stewards of the creation to serve the needs of those around us. So to get contentment from your work, you need a big picture of work. A big picture of where your work fits in to that. To be a steward of this creation. To be a worker who's serving others as Christ has called us to serve. It's good to find contentment in work. It's good to find contentment in serving others. And this is the gift of God. And look what happens when someone who has the gift of contentment. He seldom reflects on his life because God keeps him occupied with gladness of heart. That kind of joy is God's gift for the asking. To laugh more, to find pleasure in the simple things, to go back to the things that brought you happiness in the first place, and to enjoy what's handed to you day by day. These are the things contented people do. God has given them that contentedness. May God give you that contentedness today as well. Amen. Let's pray. O Lord, teach us the secret of being content in any and every situation, whether well-fed or hungry. Help us to receive your gift of joy. Help us to find the strength that comes from Christ. For we know that we can do all things that with the help that Christ gives to those who need it. Save us from our discontent. May we be truly joyful disciples at work who know the wisdom that your Spirit gives. In Jesus, amen.